Coming up on today's episode of the Locked On Bucks podcast, we are joined by Scott Smith of Buccaneers.com to discuss the Buccaneers and Super Bowl 54.
Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. Blue Chew, that's blue like the color blue. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as the pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. For instance, you know, a lot of guys talk a big game, but if you're a one-and-done kind of guy, Blue Chew can even help you get to round number two. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than the pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for all our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when using our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay the $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to try Blue Chew for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Are you the type of fan that knows football so well that you could choose any game and call it? Well, MyBookie is a place for you because they let you turn all your sports knowledge into cash in your wallet. Between football season, NBA, and the start of college basketball season, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you join right now, MyBookie will match your deposit halfway, all the way up to $1,000. That means if you deposit $2,000, you get an extra $1,000 in free money to play with. Just use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. Once again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to take advantage of MyBookie's generous sign-up offer. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucks podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucksNation.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucks, at Jarko underscore Bucks, at DH82 underscore Bucks, and at Bucks underscore Nation. Joining us now, one of our absolute favorite guests to have on the podcast. It's been a little while, so we're excited to have him back. It is Scott Smith of Buccaneers.com. Scott, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing real good. Relax now. You know, couple weeks out of the season, had some time to decompress.
Yeah, relax
a little bit. Watch some playoff football.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, we'll get to the playoffs momentarily, but let's go ahead and jump in. Obviously talking about the 2019 Buccaneers season and just kind of what was your overall takeaway from how the season went? It was ugly on the defensive side early on, and then the defense shored up, and all of a sudden Jameis was turning the ball over at a rapid rate. But overall, kind of the atmosphere and everything involved with the ups and downs of the 2019 season.
Yeah, there were definitely ups and downs. The thing that I think the biggest takeaway for me, and you kind of mentioned it there, was the defense finding its footing around midseason. And I would be lying if I said I was confident that was going to happen. The first seven or eight games looked a lot like the previous couple seasons, which had been frustrating, at least in terms of results. I mean, the style of defense was different, I felt. It was more aggressive. Sometimes those old defenses of the past couple of years were frustrating to watch because it seemed that it was very passive and, you know, 10-yard cushions on third and seven and stuff like that. And definitely Todd Bowles wasn't in any way passive, I don't think, in the construction of his defense. But the results weren't, in terms of pass defense, any better. And then you start thinking, wow, we have sunk so many draft assets, day one and two draft assets, into this secondary, and it's not working, and it's a double-edged, well, it's a that's a double problem, because if you spend a lot of second and third round picks on the secondary and you don't solve the secondary, you didn't do that, and you also miss the opportunities to draft players at like offensive line or get yourself some defensive line depth, stuff like that. So it was worrisome. So to me, the best thing that happened was that secondary pulling together. And by the end of the season, I personally felt pretty confident that we now do have what we need moving forward. And it's young, so that's good, to actually have a good defense from front to back.
Yeah, and Scott, I think everybody kind of shared in that surprise a little bit. I remember, you know, going through training camp in the preseason, people were starting to get really excited about the defense, and then the way that the year started obviously wasn't what everybody wanted. But they, like you said, they grew into their roles and they grew into to meet those expectations that were set early on. But speaking of all those position groups, and of course, obviously the draft is coming up. You're going to be heavily involved in that coverage along with Carmen and everything you guys do at Bucs.com. What do you say right now, outside of the quarterback position, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about Jameis Winston, but as of right now, the only quarterback under contract for 2020 is Ryan Griffin, and no disrespect to Ryan, I think the Bucs are going to look to add to that position. So outside of quarterback, where do you see the area that maybe the Buccaneers should focus on the most between the 2019 and 2020 versions?
In the draft? Or just in general?
Yeah, in the draft and free agency, however they go about plugging whatever hole you think is the biggest one.
Well, a lot of that, when you get to the draft, a lot of that answer is going to depend on what just happened in free agency in the previous 6 weeks or so. Because if you are able to get back everybody that Bruce wants to get back, you know, obviously Shaq Barrett is tops of that list, but he also very much wants JPP back, and Ndamukong Suh, and Carl Nassib is a free agent, other guys along the line. If you can get a good core of that back, then you might feel all right. You know, you got Shaq Barrett and JPP and you know, maybe Anthony Nelson comes on a little bit in year two. I know they were really excited when they got him in the draft. So if that were to happen, something along those lines, to me, the number one spot I think you need to address is the offensive line, and particularly tackle. You know, this team hasn't drafted a tackle in the first round since Kenyatta Walker in 2001. And we haven't drafted a offensive lineman of any kind in the first round. Donovan Smith was close, but since David Joseph in 2006, I just think it might be time. You know, some of that is because the Bucs managed to really hit on two undrafted free agents, Donald Penn and DeMar Dotson, that filled those starts for so many years. But I think it's the time when you probably need to add a draft infusion there. And, you know, DeMar Dotson is 34. I love the guy. He's one of my favorite players on the team. Great dude, but he's 34 and he's a free agent. And Donovan Smith has 2 years left on his contract, the second one he got. And it just seems to me with the way this, from the pundits saying, the places that this draft is deep and things that could be of value for the Buccaneers around the middle of the first round, it just seems like a good matchup of need and opportunity there to me.
Yeah, Scott, I love the fact that you brought that up, because David and I, earlier in the week, we were doing a 2020 positional primer and we discussed the offensive line, and David brought up something that it never really crossed my mind, and I didn't really even think of it as a possibility. But I'd like your thoughts on, do you think it's a possibility that the Bucs do address tackle in the draft, as you alluded to, and possibly move Donovan Smith from the left side over to the right?
Yeah, it's possible. It would surprise me if that were to happen this year. It would seem like a good approach. If you find a guy in the draft, and there are several from what I've read through the prospects, there are several that could conceivably be considered guys that could play on either side. And if you can find one that you think is versatile, I don't know, it feels like it might make more sense to me to start that guy at right tackle and then maybe groom him to be an eventual replacement at left tackle if you don't sign Donovan to another contract. But yeah, I mean, that's not a terrible theory. One of the other reasons why I think it's the best target in this year's draft first round for the Bucs is I don't think you want to put another big contract into that line right now when you're already paying Donovan and Ryan Jensen and Ali Marpet top dollar. And there's other needs on this team, obviously quarterback. And then we talked about all the front seven guys that you're going to need that cap space for. And I'm just not sure. It seems to me the best way to get a potential right away starter for maybe right tackle is the first round of the draft.
Yeah, I completely agree, Scott. Now, how do you feel? So we've got like the PFF grades and everybody's talked about other stuff, and we've kind of talked about the offensive line. And we just had our preview go up this week of the offensive, or our primer as well go up this week. How do you feel about Alex Kappa moving forward? Like if the Buccaneers can really only, obviously they only draft one first round draft pick. I mean, I guess never say never, but it seems most likely the Bucs will only have one first round draft pick. And if they invest that in, say, a right tackle, how do you feel about Alex Kappa moving forward as potentially a starter, or even a guy coming and competing against like a third round draft pick for that starting spot?
Right. Like Kappa was a third round draft pick.
Right.
You know, so you mentioned PFF grades. I generally stay away from that because I feel right. like from what I hear inside the building that some of the, what they do, maybe football people in the league don't necessarily agree with. And I just don't know what they produce that I can, you know, that I can know for sure is accurate, an accurate depiction of that player. I'm not saying they're wrong. And you haven't even told me yet what they think of Kappa, but I feel hypocritical using it when they say something good about one of our players, because I don't tend to use it when they say something bad about one of our players. I just don't know whether I can trust it, you know? But obviously there's a vacuum there when you're trying to judge offensive linemen, because you don't have a lot of stats to work with. And it's hard to describe. Like, I could say I think Alex Kappa had a great year, and you could say you think Alex Kappa had a terrible year, and it would be a little difficult for us to really prove our point too strongly. All I can say is I think that internally they were relatively pleased with his first year as a starter and still believe he can be a long-term solution there. So that's from the inside. Now, does PFF disagree? You can tell me.
I mean, honestly, Scott, I don't know what PFF graded him on. James and I really don't lean on PFF too high. I'll basically echo the sentiment that you just said. I just threw PFF because, you know, they're a name out there that everybody knows evaluates players.
Yeah, so. And I'm really not even trying to diminish what they're doing. I just don't really know. I don't feel good trusting what they say about players as gospel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. So. No, there's a lot that goes into how they get their grades, and the problem is most of us outside of that process don't really know what it is they're using, so it's hard to trust it if you don't know what went into making the chili, so to speak.
Right. And I mean, if you look at how this team through the last few years and two different coaching staffs now have always talked about Donovan Smith, there's always been a gulf there between internal perception of him and external perception from sources like PFF. And so, you know, it's hard for me to know. All I can really go by is what I hear internally, and I do think they still feel pretty good about Kappa. And I don't know. I do think that right tackle is more important, and that it would make you might be able to find help in the second or third round and bring in competition. But I would imagine that Kappa is plan 1A at this point for right guard next year.
No, yeah, I definitely agree, Scott. And I mean, getting into, you know, future plans, of course, and we have to ask you the question because it's something that we have to ask everybody and at least get your thoughts on the record for all of the Bucs fandom to hear about. Jameis Winston. So like we've already said, the Bucs need a quarterback for 2020. Is it going to be Jameis Winston? Is it going to be somebody else? What are your thoughts on everything going on surrounding that situation?
Yeah, you don't have to worry about me getting on the record on that, because every time we do any kind of show, like our Wednesday thing with Casey, that question is asked every time. So just like you guys, I've had to address that many, many times. And one thing I will say is that we do get questions like, when is this going to be resolved? And I don't think it's anywhere close to being resolved. You look through, right. It's a complicated matter, if you ask me, because what's so crazy about this one is we could sit here and debate, realistically, I think, both sides of this, of whether the Bucs should want Jameis Winston to be their starting quarterback going forward. But if you do decide to re-sign Jameis, it's going to cost so much, right? So it's a weird decision in that there seems to be a complete disconnect between huge groups of Bucks fans and others about whether or not you should do it. But if you do it, you have to pay a premium, like he's being paid one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So it's a difficult situation, if you ask me, and especially because there's the possibility of franchise or transition tags. If you had a play, we were talking about a guy, as everybody said, I'm going to be the 8 millionth one to say it, who just broke the team records and led the NFL in passing yards, second in passing touchdowns, and that's fantastic and awesome. And he also led the NFL with 30 interceptions, which is really bad. And so you would say you got a player with, at least statistically, some really good and some really bad. So what would that be worth? You know, maybe that's worth $20 million and not $30 million. But you're probably not going to be able to get Jameis for $20 million, right? I mean, that doesn't seem realistic. He just made, what, 21 or 22 last year?
So, right. I think the ballpark number James and I have kind of come comfortable with, as much as that's worth us being comfortable with any number, I think I think max is out at 25, James, if that's correct. That's where I'm at, essentially. Not that it matters, but
there's a market value number on SpotTrack. I don't know if you guys ever use SpotTrack for contract stuff, but I think that's right around there. I think they have them right around that. And that's fine. That's just what it costs to do a quarterback. But I was saying all that just to say it's such a complicated situation, and I don't think it gets resolved until a lot closer to the start of the new league year. Of course, there is that date, I think maybe it's March 10, which is the end of the couple-week window to use a franchise tag.
Right.
So you might know something by then. If the Bucks do use a tag, then obviously they're going to make an effort to keep him around. What do I think? If I'm a betting man, I think that Jameis is the quarterback for the Bucks in 2020. That would be my guess. But I wish I could feel more strongly about it one way or another. It seems like anything still remains totally possible.
In your opinion, how different of a conversation are we all having about Jameis Winston if he does not throw those, what was it, 6 interceptions in the final 2 games?
That is a fantastic question, and I'll build on that by saying, if I'm not mistaken, the previous 2 games before that were the 2 games in a row where he threw for over 450 and 4 touchdowns. I think maybe Jacksonville and Detroit.
Yeah,
and I remember
it was right around there for sure.
Yeah, I remember going into December being asked these questions and feeling pretty much the way I just described it to you a moment ago, that it could go either way, and boy, we still need a little more evidence. And then after he had those 2 games in a row, he kind of was on a hot streak. I remember us saying, well, it kind of feels like that question's a lot closer to being answered now. You know, I think that the way he's going now, it really seems like if I were a betting man, I'd lean heavily towards him coming back in 2020. And therefore, like you said, it's just so weird that 2 games later, you feel like you're back in that area of uncertainty. And it just shows you how crazy of a situation this is, because I don't think any franchise wants to make a long-term decision, especially a quarterback, based on a couple games. But he has a couple great ones, and you're thinking, oh, this is a done deal. And then he finishes with a couple with too many interceptions, and you're like, are we sure? So it's crazy, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And before we move on to, well, actually, I'm not sure if David's ready to move on to the playoffs yet, but I do have a question for you, because you know I have to bring it up because it's me. Is Joe Burrow your favorite draft prospect in the history of draft prospects because he publicly trashed Skyline Chili?
Well, that just seems to add to his complete and utter total package, right? I mean, the guy is unbelievable. But
yeah,
yes, that maybe puts him over the top. It's just a shame. It doesn't seem like there's any way that would be an option for the Bucks. But boy, any team that gets that guy, isn't he basically probably the most sure first overall pick since Andrew Luck, I would think.
I believe so, for sure.
And I was telling David, you know, my son's playing competitive hockey for the first time, and he had a game at Ohio University. So we drove into Athens, Ohio, and the moment we saw the "Welcome to Athens" sign, every single billboard was Joe Burrow. It was congratulations to hometown Heisman winner Joe Burrow. You know, good luck, Joe, in the college football playoffs. Everything was That's Joe crazy. Burrow. It was wild.
Yeah. I wish the Bengals didn't have the first pick.
You and me both. I'm still, I will, until the draft actually happens, I am in the camp of trade everything for the number one pick and get Joe Burrow.
I hear you, man. I don't think the Bengals are going to give it up, man.
No, I mean, they won't. But
it's crazy. But
we are going to have a full David Carr situation in Cincinnati for Joe Burrow, and I just don't want to see it happen.
Oh boy.
Well, I mean, good news for Joe Burrow if that happens is he seems to have the personality that would go well on NFL Network. So he's probably got a future no matter what in football, some way, shape, or form. But yeah, before we move to the playoffs, Scott, so this week, you know, along with the Jameis talk, obviously there's been a lot of talk of options. Jordan Love, you know, even Joe Burrow, some veterans, Tom Brady's name was floating around there for a lot. All of it's speculation. But this week we got, I don't even want to say it's an actual connection, but maybe the closest thing you're going to get to a connection in January leading into this offseason, which is Benjamin Albright reporting that, you know, there is interest, and you kind of use that word lightly, in Phillip Rivers from the Buccaneers. Now, he doesn't say, you know, BA wants Phillip Rivers. He doesn't say Jason Light. You know, no conversations obviously have taken place because that would violate the right. collective bargaining agreement. So, again, major grain of salt needs to be taken with all of those reports, but he is the first veteran quarterback this offseason that we've actually gotten any sort of traction on maybe a connection. What are your thoughts on the potential of Phillip Rivers becoming a Buccaneer, even though it's not, you know, it's not like he's been to one buck for a cup of coffee yet or anything like that?
Yeah, well, the good news on this question is that in previous years, I probably would have jumped in the ring there with Jason Bruce, the way he described it, and said, I can't really talk about that as a team employee because he's under contract and tampering, but the NFL's tampering policy came out a few weeks ago. They reminded us, and it does say that, like, team reporters are allowed to speak about potential free agents. So the shackles are off, I guess. So I was always worried about that in the past. Casey and I, when we're doing our shows and people ask us about specific free agents, we're like, we're a little concerned if we should do that or not. But apparently it's okay. I guess that means that nobody at the NFL office really thinks that anybody's going to care what I say about Phillip Rivers as opposed to like Jason Light or something like that. So yeah, the other part of that, I don't think you mentioned it there. Isn't Phillip Rivers also moving to Florida?
He did. So the report came out and he apparently confirmed it himself that they have moved permanently to Florida to be closer to home, which I don't know. Like, I know he was like born in Alabama, went to school in North Carolina. So I'm not really sure where home is.
Right. But they moved to the panhandle.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that kind of makes sense. But so they're in the state.
You can get to a lot of places from there.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting because it makes you think about the last time Bruce started somewhere. And of course he did, I think, the very first year in Arizona when they went and got Carson Palmer. So there's a history of him taking a veteran that at the time, you guys probably recall, Carson he finished up not really in Cincinnati. I think it was kind of an ugly divorce there, if I remember correctly. And he ends up in Oakland, and that was going okay, but not phenomenally. And so when he went to Arizona, I don't think anybody thought, oh, well, you know, Bruce just solved the problem. But obviously he turned out to be great for several years for Bruce in that offense. So it doesn't surprise me that people would connect the dots this way, because it feels like a somewhat similar situation. I mean, a quarterback in around the same part of his career has had success. I would say he's had a ton of success. I would say his last year, the same thing that everybody else is saying, he was kind of prolific too, but also threw a lot of interceptions. And so if your main issue is, man, we love this prolific quarterback we have, but he just throws way too many picks, then you turn next to another guy who throws a lot of picks. But he's got an awfully good full career track record. And what Bruce was able to do with Carson Palmer previously, I mean, it connects the dots there, right? Like you said, this is just rumors at this point. Who knows if there's anything to it, but I can certainly understand why those rumors are out there.
Yeah. And I can't remember who it was on Twitter, but somebody had posted some quotes about Rivers from Bruce Arians, and Arians was just gushing over him, talking about how Phillip Rivers' DNA is comprised of winning and just loved his attitude, loved his approach to the game. So, and of course, I'm sure you could dig up quotes like that about a lot of players in the league from Bruce Arians, especially if it was pulled from a CBS broadcast. But, you know, the anti-Winston crowd is doing what they can to try to drum up interest in any other quarterback among social media.
Yeah, and I can understand it. I mean, if you're not going to do, if you were to tell me right now where the Bucs are not bringing back Jameis, I don't see any reason why having a lot of interest in the potential of a Phillip Rivers addition. I totally get that. And I will add to what you were saying about that quote. I think we all really need to be careful to take those things with a grain of salt, not only because of when he was a broadcaster for a year, but also every time a team plays another team, and then the Wednesday and Thursday and even Monday press conferences, the coaches are often asked about players on the other team, and they almost always speak about them glowingly. Just a few weeks ago, somebody made a story out of Teddy Bridgewater and these great quotes that Bruce had said about him during the season when we went to play New Orleans, and he was starting at the time. And like, well, of course he said really nice things about him. We were about to play them. I mean, if you could take that, he probably said a great thing about it almost every quarterback we faced this year. So to me, that doesn't move the needle very much. It's more looking at the history of Bruce and what he's done with some quarterbacks and situations like this in the past. I can definitely see that making sense.
All right. Well, Scott, let's go ahead and dive into the postseason a little bit and ramp up to talk about the Super Bowl. But first and foremost, what was your reaction to the non-offensive pass interference call that sent the Saints home for a second consecutive season? Because I laughed a lot.
Then we're in the same boat. Because I used to feel, you tend to feel animosity in a higher degree to the teams in your own division that you face all the time. And I used to feel less towards New Orleans than, say, Atlanta or Carolina. But that's starting to change for me. And part of it is I hate that building, that Superdome. It's my least favorite place that we have to go to every dang year. I hate it. I hate those fans. I'm not saying they're not great fans. They're passionate, and they're all into it. But if you're not a Saints fan, they are unbelievably annoying. That building is annoying. And so that they were to lose again on something that they're going to be complaining about, whether warranted or not, for the next year, it was kind of fun to watch. I hate to say, I feel kind of mean saying that, but it was kind of, if they were going to lose, to have them lose that way was a little icing on the cake.
Yeah, and there was I sent a tweet out from the Bucks Nation account. Somebody was able to dig up and find for me the non-offensive pass interference call from Michael Thomas against Vernon Hargraves that was reviewed and still upheld. And I'm like, y'all have no room to complain now, because this is what Michael Thomas got away with all year long.
I either saw that tweet from you or somebody else did the same thing, because I saw that exact same thing and they put those two videos together and they're like, Saints fans are complaining that this wasn't called, but they don't have a problem with this not being called. And it was the Thomas one on Hargraves that is so unbelievably blatant that, Yeah,
I love it when the Saints lose.
And then, of course, the other big storylines from the playoffs, Scott, was the Tennessee Titans and what they were able to do, you know, knocking out the Patriots and all that. What did you think of that run? Obviously, they're not moving on, having lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. But what did you kind of think of that? And how do you think that fits in? Because it kind of flies in the face of the narrative surrounding the NFL. It's a passing league, and you have to have that elite quarterback in order to make it to the big moments. But they did make it all the way to the AFC Championship game on the legs of Derrick Henry. So do you feel like that's kind of shaken up the internal, you know, kind of view of the NFL, or do you think it's more they're the outlier versus the norm?
Yeah, even you could throw San Francisco in there too, because in some respects their stats in terms of running and the preponderance of how much they're running and not throwing is maybe even a little more lopsided than Derrick Henry and the Titans. I mean, didn't Garoppolo throw 8 passes in that last game, something like that?
Yeah, 6 for 8 for 77.
Crazy. So you're still going to have, the people that are going to say, see, this proves that it's still critical to have a very good and power running game. And then there will be the backlash. I've already read some articles, as a matter of fact, saying, don't read too much into this. And that side always wants to lecture you like you've never heard it before, that there's a difference between cause and effect in terms of running the ball well and winning. And they always want to lecture you about that as if you don't already know it and haven't heard it 1,000 times, that in many cases, teams run the ball very well in the game because they're winning. And we all know that, right? You guys know that by now. We all know that, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody gets that. So I wish they would stop throwing that in our faces like we don't understand that. But you can still take a little bit away from this, I think, that it's still, if you do have a very good running game, which the Buccaneers didn't, as an example, maybe you don't win because you started running the ball and you said, I'm going into this game and I'm going to run it 47 times. Maybe you win because you get ahead early and then your running game is fantastic. But still, that tells you something. If you are able to take, like San Fran has done the last couple weeks, take an early lead and just smash it in your opponent's face. And by only throwing 8 or 10 passes, obviously greatly reduce your risk. Think about how much difference that could have made for the Buccaneers. Think about games that there was a handful of games the Bucs were leading in the second half and even going into the third quarter that they did not win. And we threw 30 interceptions because we threw the ball, not only because, but partly because we threw the ball like 650 times. If you have that other component to your game, I think it drastically changes what you're capable of doing. So you can go ahead and tell me, and I'm an analytics guy, so I'm not being anti-analytics here, but you can go ahead and tell me to your blue in the face that this is still a passing game and that these playoffs don't prove anything. But I think that's taking it a little too far to the extreme on the other side, personally. You know what I'm saying? I don't think that the Buccaneers need to go sign Derrick Henry, but I think it does show how much difference could make if you do have a power running game that you can rely on. Does that make sense?
Oh, 100%. And now I'm just having visions of Phillip Rivers and Melvin Gordon coming to Tampa, but hey, that's...
you just want... just give us all the good charges.
Yeah, pretty much. except for Derwin James. I still don't want him just out of pure spite. All right, well... Scott, before we dive too much into what you think will happen, let's talk a little bit about what you want to see happen. Because before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about the Super Bowl, and you obviously have connections to both teams now. You'd mentioned that you worked for the Kansas City Chiefs before you started working for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And of course, with the San Francisco 49ers, the GM, John Lynch, somebody that you know, dealt with on a day-to-day basis, and linebacker Kwon Alexander. So which side are you pulling for in this Super Bowl?
Well, like you said, my first job in the NFL and my first job out of college was with the Chiefs. And it was in 1991. I got the job here with the Bucks the next year. I was an intern there in 91, and it was an awesome experience. I absolutely loved it. I loved the guys in the PR department that I was working with. And then that was a pretty amazing staff that had. The head coach was Marty Schottenheimer, but Bruce Arians was on that staff as an example, and so was Tony Dungy and new Hall of Famer Bill Cowher. I mean, it was just absolutely loaded with names you would recognize. Of course, I didn't have any idea that was going to be the case back in 1991, but it was Derek Thomas was on that team, Neil Smith, Kevin Ross, just all kinds of just fantastic players. And so I really, really loved working there. And I grew up in Missouri on the other side of the state in St. Louis. So it was close to home too. And I still feel ties to that organization. I know a couple of people that work there. And while you're right about John, I wish all the best for John Lynch and Kwon Alexander. I think I'm rooting for the Chiefs. And that's partially because, I mean, who in this game do you want to watch more than Patrick Mahomes? I just love the guy. And I'm sure most everybody else does too. He's just a joy to watch. So I think that puts it over the top for me.
Yeah, hard to argue with everything you just said there. Of course, I'm just happy as long as a Buckeye wins the Super Bowl. I'm happy, and that's a guarantee to have because both sides have Buckeyes on them. So
you got that covered, huh?
Yeah.
How many teams we're good to go don't have? Hey, the Bucks don't have a Buckeye, do we?
No, unfortunately,
there can't be too many teams. Maybe we'll take care of that.
So Will Golston is related to Vernon Golston, who was a Buckeye. So, I mean, like, oh, take it, you know, I mean, we'll stretch it. We'll stretch it out there. Family lineage. But Scott, talking about the big game, obviously, you know, you have your own memories of Super Bowls and the Buccaneers and everything. I know that Carmen said you guys are going to be doing some stuff in Miami, but I want to kind of save that for the last part. Where do you, if you have to compare both of these teams to the Buccaneers, where do you see the biggest differences between the Chiefs and the Niners and the Buccaneers? I think the Niners probably easiest to compare because of what happened in week one, but where do you see the biggest differences?
Yeah, the 49ers, I mean, their running game is obviously the big difference between them and us. They obviously have a great defensive front, although I had not realized until I was watching the podcast yesterday, I guess it was, that after their really hot start in terms of getting to the quarterback, the 49ers had a stretch to end the season where their pass rush kind of dried up a little bit. which I found surprising. But I think both teams had a very good and talented front seven this past year. You know, maybe the 49ers have a bit more of a veteran presence in their secondary. But on offense, you know, obviously our passing attack could sling it around. And when we were avoiding the turnovers, it was about as potent as you can be before the guys got hurt. But we didn't have a rushing attack, anything like San Francisco's. And then as for the Chiefs, I mean, I'll just go back to the same answer. The difference between the Chiefs and almost every other team is Patrick Mahomes.
All right. And the last one that I have for you regarding the Super Bowl would be, what's your prediction? Who's going to win? What's the score going to be? And who's the MVP?
I think it's going to be I think Kansas City's going to win. I think they won't get down early like they have in the last couple games, although obviously that hasn't proven to be a huge problem. So they'll probably be able to keep the 49ers from running a game plan where they run the ball 47 times and throw it 8 or whatever it was. And in that regard, I think that the Chiefs have the edge. Jimmy Garoppolo's great. I mean, I think a lot of teams love him as their quarterback, but I don't think he's in Patrick Mahomes' league. And I think that's the difference right there. San Fran does, I'll give you, they have a much better defense than Kansas City, but that was the discussion I was having with some guys in the office leading up to this weekend, where they were, you know, Tennessee was the hot thing right now, and could the Chiefs stop them? I'm like, well, I'm not necessarily sure the Chiefs have to stop them. You know, they just won a game against Houston in which they gave up 31 points, 24 by the second quarter. So when you've got Mahomes and all those guys in the offense is clicking like it is right now, I think that's going to be overwhelming, and the Chiefs will win.
If you've been a listener to this podcast, I'm sure you've heard all the great advertisers working with Locked On to reach sports fans, but you may not know that Locked On Bucks is a great way for your local business to reach passionate Buccaneers fans just like you. Unlike any other podcast, Locked On gives your local company the unique ability to reach local podcast listeners. Not just any podcast listener, a Locked On podcast listener. If your company wants to connect with Buccaneers fans and a predominantly male audience that is well-educated with disposable income, then let's put your company right here on this Locked On podcast. Local fans love to support local businesses. Text the word advertising to 33777 or visit LockedOnPodcast.com/advertising and let us know who you are. We'll get our team to help your team achieve Locked On advertising success. Once again, text the word advertising to 33777 or visit LockedOnPodcast.com/advertising. We look forward to hearing from you.
All right. Well, Scott, what do you guys have planned over at Buccaneers.com as far as what you and Carmen are working on?
We've got we got a whole bunch of Pro Bowl coverage, and she'll be reporting from the Senior Bowl. Starting to do some mock drafts pretty soon, things like that. So,
are you guys going to be doing your dueling mock drafts again this year?
I think I wanted to sit down and talk to her and see if she liked that format and if she wants to do it again. For anybody who doesn't know what you're talking about, we kind of did one mock draft every 2 weeks, but we would alternate picks. So I pick first, she picked the second one, so on. And then when we got down to the end, we both picked the whole thing and just looked at the end to see who did better. And I think she beat me by a pick in the last one because I was too stubborn and wouldn't just put Devin White in as our pick at number 5, even though practically the whole world was predicting that at that point. So I thought maybe we should dip into all these great pass rushers that are at the top of the draft because you don't get a lot of opportunities for that. So I think I had us picking Josh Allen, and she correctly read the tea leaves and picked Devin White, and that was the difference. And that obviously worked out for the Bucs because I think Devin White's going to be a great player for a long time, and we got our pass rush from Shaq Barrett.
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, so, I mean, you both still had like 4 or 5 picks that were correct, which is really good for a first round because, I mean, one trade can just throw everything out of whack. And so I think getting 4 or 5 picks right is good. I enjoyed the series, the dueling mock draft. So what it's worth, I would like to see it return.
Okay. Well, that's probably what we'll do. I think we're right in the 5 or 6 pick range, right? And you're right. Once it blows up early, once somebody does something you don't expect, it can just ruin the whole thing. So, but it's fun. It's fun.
Now
everybody loves mock drafts, right?
You got that right. Now, something else that we failed to ask Carmen, and now that we have you on, I'll go ahead and ask: How did the fantasy league finish out?
Okay, so And again, if anybody doesn't know what we're talking about here, we did for the first time a thing where Carmen and I and Casey Phillips were all going to be part of a fantasy league, a 12-team league, and then the other nine were filled by fans who won a contest where they had to write in and explain why we should choose them. And so we had nine fans and three of us. We called ourselves the pros, but I think when it came down to it, those fantasy football-loving fans were a lot better at fantasy football than we were. Casey did not fare well. I think she came in last. Carmen barely missed the playoffs, and I barely made the playoffs. My team lost like the last four or five games. Everybody got hurt. I had no depth because I didn't draft well after like the first eight rounds. And I had a great team when everybody was healthy, and that didn't last. So I barely squeaked into the playoffs and was eliminated in the first round. And one of the fans went on to win. I don't know how you know the difference between one or the other, but it was a fan who was the victor, so they got the bragging rights and the tickets and the big championship belt and all that. And I think we're going to continue to do it next year. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
Look for that in August. It was a lot of fun. There was a lot of talk in that league, and there was some personality. There were some big personalities, and there were some guys that really kind of rubbed each other the wrong way. So it got a little competitive there down towards the end. But the guy who ended up winning it all pretty much stayed above the fray the whole time.
So it's funny because I actually have a little bit of personal history with one of those contestants.
No.
I'm not going to expand on that any further.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that offline then. Because
yeah, we can
I
do
can
that.
Which one?
Probably. We can definitely do that.
Well, I can narrow it down to two.
I was just going to say the most important thing is that you have bragging rights over Casey and Carmen until the next year. So, I mean, that's a big win for you because if Casey or Carmen had beaten you out, I'm sure they would not let you live it down.
Carmen in particular, I think she would remind me. Yeah.
All right.
I will say that she traded for Lamar Jackson relatively early in the year.
Nice.
Actually, I think maybe from the guy who won it all. But in any case, she traded for Lamar Jackson before it was obvious he was going to be like fantasy gold. So that was a good move.
That's a vet move right there. All right. Well, Scott, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate some of your time. Enjoyed talking Bucks and NFL playoffs with you. And look forward to having you on again real soon.
Sounds great, guys. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. And of course, you can check out everything that Scott is doing over at Buccaneers.com and follow him on Twitter at Scott S. Bucks. Please make sure you're checking out everything David and I are doing over at BucksNation.com. Make sure that you're following along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JArco_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. Hope you all have an absolutely outstanding day, and we thank you so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks.